And we're holding the last words of page 36 in Brachas, middle of Os Kuf Lamed Beis. We're in the middle of talking about that the Gemara mentioned, so the Mishnah had said that a person has to love Hashem, the Pasuk says a person has to love Hashem b'chol levavecha, b'chol levavecha. The Mishnah had said it means b'shnei yitzarecha. And that led us into a discussion of the Pasuk by Yitzer Hashem Elokim, that we said there's one meaning is that a person has a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara. Another point is also that it means that Hashem created Adam and Chava as two people back to back, like Siamese twins joined together. And the Gemara has been discussing that and a different versus a different opinion that says that Chava was created originally as a zonov, which we talked about on Thursday. It doesn't necessarily mean a tail. It means an extra part of the body that afterwards was separated out from Adam and built up into Chava. When I mentioned a vote from the Maharal about that on Thursday, I got it a little bit wrong. I looked it up again. What he says is the two opinions, whether Chava was created as a paratzuf or as a zanov, the question is, we know that people are greater than malachim because we have the opportunity to do Torah and mitzvahs and malachim don't. They're oimdim, we're mahalfim. The question is that the two opinions over here are, is a woman on that same level higher than the malachim, or is she on a level only equal to the malachim? That came up, for example, by Kriyas Yamsuf. We know that Hashem didn't want to allow the malachim to sing until Bnei Yisrael sing Oz Yashir. And then the question became, what about the women? Do the malachim get to sing at least at the same time as the women, or do they have to wait for the women to finish their song also? There's even a verse that says that's why the pasuk says Vatan Lahem Miriam. Why in Lashon Zachar, Vatan Lahem means she said to them, to the malachim, fine, I'll give you permission, you can go ahead first. But now, two opinions, that Pautzuf or Zanov. No, just Mitzad that she was willing to, fine, you know, you've been waiting all this time for her husbands. While they said Shira, fine, she says, I'll give you a break and let you go before us. Anyway, the point is, Maharal says, if you say that Chava was created as a Pautzuf, then it means that like Adam, that men and women are both higher than the Malachim. If you say that the woman was created originally as a Zanov, and then it means the male is higher than Malachim. The woman is on an equal level to Malachim, not higher than them, like man is. She has mitzvahs, but not as many as men. So therefore, that would be a reason.
More than Malachim.
More than Malachim, but still not as many. So that might be a reason to say that they're not on as high a level. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Last words of that set of that last words of page Tzadik Ches and Brachos. Bishleimelamanda omapautzu. I understand according to the opinion that that Chava was created as a separate human figure, heimdichtiv, by Yitzer b'shnei yudin. Well, then that explains the word by Yitzer with the double yud that we said before can represent that point, du partzuf. El lamanda om zonov, but if you say that she was created only as an appendage to Adam, my by Yitzer, then what is the word by Yitzer representing? And the answer is kedir b'shimben pazi. In that case, then it would teach us what we had earlier in the sugya, what b'shimben pazi dashens from that word, domer b'shimben pazi, oli mi yotzui, oli mi yitzui. Woe from my yotzer, from my creator, woe to me from my yetzer. In other words, the word vayitzer, we're dashening vay yetzer. And the word yetzer means the yetzer, as in the one hand, the yetzer hara. It also means the yotzer, the creator. Marsha pointed out before also that you could say vayitzer actually stands for vay from the tzaddik and the rosha, the tzaddik meaning Hashem, and the rosha meaning the yetzer hara. So in other words, that a person, like we had earlier, a person is being pulled in both directions. Either way, I'm in trouble. If I follow the yetzer hara, then I'm in trouble with Hashem. And if I follow Hashem, then the yetzer hara is always trying to trip me up. So according to that, vayitzer represents that, not necessarily that Hashem created two human figures to begin with. There's a verse from Ben Yehoyada. He says that also, actually, what this oli mi yotzri, oli mi yitzri, can also mean sometimes sometimes a person is accomplishing some kind of mitzvah, some kind of midah tova, and then the yetzer hara gets involved and tries to spoil it. And he gives it as an example. You have the scenario, for example, where a person has worked on his midah of anivus, and now his yetzer hara starts convincing him, look what a great guy you are, what an honor. As we find examples of that. So that's also what we mean, oli mi yotzri, oli mi yitzri, that even if I finally get something that puts me in good shape with yotzri, still the yitzri starts trying to interfere. The Gemara continues, b'shleim l'manda om a paratzuf. Again, according to the opinion that Chava was created as a separate paratzuf, then it's easy to understand haim b'chdib zocho in the cave of Brahm. The pasuk says that Hashem created them male and female. So okay, Hashem created two full human figures, one male, one female, and then he split them apart. But if you say that Chava was created only as an extra part of Adam's body, my Zohar in the cave of Bram, so what does that pasuk mean? First Hashem created the man, and only later he created the woman. And the answer is, in that case, Kedirababoch. In that case, that teaches us what Rababohu says. Rababohu Rami. Rababohu, in fact, points out, in these psukim, you have a contradiction. Ksiv hacha Zohar in the cave of Bram. Here you have a pasuk that says that Hashem created them male and female, implying that Hashem created them both equally with B'Tselem Alekim. Uchtiv ki B'Tselem Alekim also as Adam. But later on, you have a pasuk that says that Hashem created Adam in Tselem Alekim, implying, but not Chava. So what is it? So did Hashem create Chava B'Tselem Alekim or not? Okay, Tzad. So Rabbi Bohu says, B'Tchila, all of Machshava Livres Shnayim. Originally, Hashem planned to create two. Or Ella Echad, in the end Hashem created as one. So even according to the opinion that she was created originally as Zonav, the intention was all along that it should be Zohar in the cave. Now, what does that mean? Hashem doesn't change his mind. So there's a tshuva where the Rashba explains like this. In general, when we talk about that Hashem, we have the Rebbe brings this in many places in Sichos, when we talk about that Hashem thought to do something and in the end did something different, means that Hashem put the potential in the world for that original thing to still come out later on. Now, what it is like this, that Ashba explains. Every other creature were created males and females, but they weren't created. You didn't have any such thing where the male was created and then the female was separated from him. They were created to begin with as separate beings coming out of the ground or coming out of whatever they were created out of. So what's the result of that? Most creatures, they don't mate for life. They have males and females. They get together. They spawn children or whatever. And then they each go their separate ways. They have no particular connection between them. So Hashem's original intention was that people would be like that as well. Then Hashem said, no, I wanted God to make it that people should have that deep neshama connection. They should be like two halves of a neshama in separate bodies where it won't just be that they get together, they have children, and then that's it. Each one goes their own way, but rather that they're going to bond together, begashnius and beruchnius. So that's what it means, that in the end, Hashem created it as one and then took that one and split it into two in order that now every time you have a man and a woman, wherever they are in the world, they are two halves of one neshama, and in a certain sense, two halves of one body, and then they reunite. So that's what it means, Zohar in the cave of Bram. Even if we say that Chava was originally created as a Zonav, the point is that she and Adam were, that the intention was all along that there should be a co-equal Zohar in the cave. Next. The Gemara says, "Bishleim l'mander am a parutzuf." I understand according to the opinion that Chava was created as a parutzuf. That's what it means. The pasuk says that Hashem closed up flesh instead of her, having taken out the zonav, whether it was a rib, whether it was whatever part of the body. So Hashem had to close it up so that there's no scar over there. El l'mander am that's if it was a parutzuf. Rather, if it was a parutzuf, then fine. There's a full body attached to Adam's back. So therefore, so when Hashem separates it, then he has to put basar tachten. El olmando om a zonav, but if it was only an appendage of his body, mai vayisko basar tachtena. So what does that mean? In other words, fine, so there'll be a scar, big deal. Why is it important for the pasuk to mention the point that Hashem closed up the flesh? And the answer is, omer of yumi, v'yitamer of zvid, v'yitamer of nachum yitzchok. As a matter of fact, yeah, lo yitzchuchai lo l'mokim chasach. Yes, exactly, that is what it means. There could have been a scar left there, and it could be. You could have, for example, but it would have been only on other mission. You could have had that every man from then on has a scar in the same place. Instead, Hashem closed it up so that there's no scar left over there. One point is, we're not just talking about a gashmiistic scar also. We're talking about an emotional one also. Like you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin where a min or the emperor, I forget who it was, anyway, says to the Gamliel, Hashem was a thief. He put on him to sleep and stole a piece from him to make chava. And you have the whole discussion over there where his daughter gets involved and then gives a marshal over there. Anyway, the upshot is that Hashem wants to forestall any such thing. Like this, Adam could, when he wakes up, he could complain, look at this, I used to have something good, I used to have an extra part of me, and now that's missing. You're going to tell him, yeah, but you have, as the Gemara says over there, shit full of sham. So it's still, you know, people can always look for arguments to complain. So like this, the Eibush to close it up so that he doesn't even feel there's anything missing over there. Next, the Gemara says, that too, every time he sees the scar to remind him, yeah, you're having that Gemara. Also, the mushel that the Kesu's daughter gives of taking a raw piece of meat and grilling it, where you realize how bloody and disgusting it was before. Yeah, yeah, all of that is included. Yeah. So up till now, the questions the Gemara has had have all been that it seems to be more straightforward to understand the Psukim if you understand that Chava was created as a Pautzuf rather than as a Zonav. And we have to find for each one an answer. Now we have the other way around. B'shleim l'manda om a Zonav, according to the opinion that she was created as a Zonav, well, then now we understand. The pasuk says Hashem built. Literally, Hashem had to build up this one piece that he took out of Adam and build it up into a full human, being. But if you say that it means a pautzuf, she already had a fully delineated body and she was just attached to Adam back to back, then what's the vayiven? What had to be built up? And the answer is Mibola Lchidr of Shimon Manasseh. In that case, then the word Vayivan, according to that opinion, is needed to teach us what Rav Shimon Manasseh says, the Omar, or the Dorish Rav Shimon Manasseh, my dichtiv Vayivan Hashem Elokim Asatzeva. What does this pasuk mean? According to the opinion that she was created as a Pautzuf and nothing needed to be built up, means Malamet Shekila HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Chava. This teaches us that Hashem braided Chava's hair, the Havia La Adam, and brought her to Adam. And where do we see, what does Vayivan have to do with braiding? Shekein v'krake hayom, we see that in the cities near the sea, the Pashas, we mean near the sea coast of Eretz Yisrael, but whatever, wherever it was, kodem l'kaliosa b'niyosa. Their word for braiding is b'niyosa. So therefore, now we understand, based on that, the word Vayivan means that Hashem braided her hair. There is, by the way, there's a famous thing the Shalach Kodesh says on such things. We have all over the place where the Gemara and the Midrashim, Daushin words in the Torah as coming from foreign languages. We know, for example, Tach Kaspi Shtayim, Paska Afriki Shtayim. You have places where the Gemara says that a word in Chumash comes from Greek, etc. So the Shalach Kodesh says all of these words originally were in Lashon Kodesh, but some of them stopped being used in Lashon Kodesh, and they continued to be used in other languages after the Torah. After all the languages mixed up, some of these languages wound up with words that used to be part of Lashon Kodesh, but they are in fact part of Lashon Kodesh, and therefore they're in the Torah. Anyway, the point is that Vayiven, according to that, means that Hashem braided her hair. The Pashtos, yeah, and by the way, that has implications in Halacha, the Gemara discusses in the Sefer Shabbos. Now, you're not allowed to braid hair on Shabbos. There's actually an opinion over there, I think Rabbi Eliezer, who says a person would be Takabi Chayiv Chafas for it, according to him. It's a Malacha Daraisa of Boin. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is only the rabbanon, but still, it's also. Why did he braid her hair? The obvious thing would be that Pashit, in order to make her beautiful, you make a kala beautiful for her chasim. There are a couple of interesting explanations. One of them being that a braid is made out of at least three strands. So therefore, it represents the point that, like this, you have Adam and Chava, but you need Hashem to come together to be the third member of the braid in order to make it last. You try to braid two strands together, it won't last. You need a third one in order to make it a strong braid, in the same way that Eibishter is actually making it that a human marriage should have a permanence to it. So that's one. Rabbi Yonasan Eibishter also says another word. The word shekila, he says, the word kila, we also find in the Gemara here and there, means hangings, like curtains. So it means that Hashem put curtains for them up, so that when they have the chuppah, and afterwards when they first have bia, that they're doing it in privacy. Even though it was before the chaytei tzedas, there's still an inyan that it should be done in privacy. We see Rashi mentions on the pasuk that in fact they didn't, and the snake got jealous, and that's what led to everything. So the Eibishter was trying to force all that by making, Rabbi Yonasan Eibishter says, by making shekila, Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Chava, that Hashem put up curtains over there so they'd have privacy. Anyway, according to that, according to the opinion that she was created as a tzela, then Vayivan means literally Hashem had to build up that tzela to make it into a woman. According to the opinion that she was created as a paratzuf, then Vayivan means this braiding or this putting up curtains or whatever. Dabaracha, another explanation of Vayivan, Omer of Chista v'amilob masnisa tona, and of Chista says, or some say we learn in a b'laisa, melamed shebara ushebna ha-kadosh baruch ulechava kibinyan oitzer. It means that Hashem built Chava like the way you build a granary for storing grain. Ma oitzer zeh, now when you build in a granary, you don't want to make that the walls are straight, because what happens is, you think about it, as you pile in the grain, you have more and more pressure is being put on the upper parts of the walls. So therefore, the whole thing is liable to collapse. What you do is, therefore, you make it wider on the bottom. Ma oitzezer, rochav milamata, rekotze milamayla. You make it widest on the bottom, because there you have the greatest pressure, and narrower on the top. Kedei l'kabel ha'peiros, so that it will be able to hold the produce, and it won't break. The same way a woman's body is built, she's wider below, her hips are wider, and narrowing toward the top. The uterus is wider toward the bottom and narrows toward the top. In order to be able to carry a baby. So that's the vayiven that Hashem built, the woman's body with giving extra chochma about how she's going to be carrying a baby. The Rif also points out, by the way, you have the Medrash that says Vayiven also has Meloshin Bina, that we know that Bina Yisera Nitna Ba'isha, and we know that women grow up faster and therefore they become Chayiv and Mitzvahs a year earlier than men. We learn that from Vayiven as well, that Hashem gave them an extra degree of Bina.
So you can say that the fact that only when she matures, that point, the body takes on that form, because that's when she can have children.
Because that's when she can have children, of course, right, yeah. When, yeah. The pasuk continues while we're dashing in this. The Gemara continues. The pasuk says the pasuk continues by the Eher al Adam. Hashem brought Chava to Adam. So Amar Abiyu Mi Ben Elazar Melamed Shasa Hakadosh Baruch Hu LaAdam Bereshit Shushvinus. This means that Hashem acted towards Adam as a shushvin. Literally, Ma'ushah points out a shushvin really means a good friend. But in Gemara terminology, a lot of times a shushvin means an unterfeher. So it means, and actually, not well, it can mean an unterfeher, but more generally, actually, in Gemara terminology, a shushvin in particular means somebody who helps you make the wedding. You have in Bava Basra, you have a whole sugya about the dinim of shushvinus, about you have your friends help in with your wedding expenses, and you invite them, and eventually they make weddings, and you help with their expenses, and then they invite you, etc. So that's a shushvin. So now Hashem did that for Adam Rishon. To make his wedding, to arrange his wedding. We can limb the Torah derech eretz. From here, the Torah teaches the proper way of behavior, that a greater person should be willing to go ahead and be a shushvin and be an unterfeher, or in general, to be working on making the shidduch, on making the wedding and all, even for a lesser person, and he shouldn't feel bad, he shouldn't think it's beneath his dignity, because obviously if the Eibishter could do it for Adam Rishon, then he can do it for a fellow boss of a job. Okay. The Gemara says, fine, so now we've gone through all the various possibilities about all the various psukim and explained them according to both opinions, that Chava was created as a parutzuf and that she was created as a zana. So now the question is, Lamanda, I'm a parutzuf. Well, according to the opinion, zana, there's nothing to talk about. Obviously, when Adam is walking around, he's walking around, and the zana is just another part of his body. But Lamanda, I'm a parutzuf, but according to the opinion that Chava was a full human being attached back to Adam, which one of them would walk first? So in other words, you think about it, when they're walking, one of them is going to have to be walking forward, the other one backward, so which one is the one that takes the lead? Yeah, there's like Siamese twins. So imagine, if you have Siamese twins back to back, if each one tries to go in their direction, they're not going anywhere. The Marsham mentions in this connection, you have an expression in the Gemara in Erevin that calls a person who's stuck and can't go in either direction. The Gemara calls him Chamer Gamol. Like you have in certain dinim of Erevin, sometimes you have that Erevin will put down in a way that makes a person stuck. So you have as if like he's a donkey driver and a camel driver. A donkey driver walks in front of the animal, a camel driver, a donkey driver walks behind the animal, a camel driver walks in front of it. So if you're a chamo gamo, you're like stuck in the middle. You can't go any place other than between them. So therefore, it became a metaphor for like when you're stuck in place. So here, if the two of them, if each of them is going to try to go in their direction, nobody's going anywhere. So which one gets to take the lead? It makes sense that the Zohar, that the Adam side of the body would be the one who goes first and Chava has to walk backwards behind him. Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Lo Yahalach Adam Achoda Isha Baderach, a man should not walk behind a woman on the road, Ba'afilu Hi Ishtoi, even if she's his wife. Now Rashi says, because it would be a Gnai. So in other words, Marashal says, we're talking about his own wife. So there's no Issa involved. And we have to remember, before the Chayt Yetzadas, also there wasn't necessarily an Isser involved. They didn't have a Yetzirah. But nevertheless, it would be a Gnai that the greater one should be going first and the lesser one should be going afterwards. So since, after all, Adam, again, being that he has the Chiv Shua, he has the greater number of mitzvahs, the Eishka spoke directly to him and not to Chava, etc. So he's the greater one. And therefore, it's only appropriate that he should be the one going first. Then Marashah goes on to say, now the Rambam understands differently. The Rambam would understand that, for example, when we say in Pirkei Avos that Altar B'Sichah in the Ishta Yom Kavachav V'Ishas Chaveray, the Rambam explains on that Mishnah that the problem is because even with your own wife, it's true, of course, your own wife is mutter to you. Nevertheless, the having too much conversation with her can lead to an inappropriate amount of mishgal, of having relations. We know that even though a person is supposed to have relations with his wife, but he's still, the Gemara mentions elsewhere the idea that it shouldn't be katana gurdam, it shouldn't be just like chicken, like doing it all the time. So then, according to that, Marashah says, then the vote would be that, so now, over here, the two of them are facing in opposite directions. So therefore, so it's not like he's going to be looking at her anyway. There can't be a matter of Issa involved over here. Necessarily, therefore, it's only a matter of Gnai in this case. If they were facing each other, then you could talk. Like the Rambam says, that maybe you also have the problem of that it brings them to relate to each other too much in a gashmiistic way and not other ways. But once we're talking about they're anyway facing an opposite direction, then that wouldn't apply. The only possible reason would be Gnai. Would be that it's improper for the lesser, for the less important one to be going first. That's why we sit in different places. So, right.
That's why men and women see two different ways.
So lo yahalach adam achori isha baderech, a man shouldn't walk behind a woman on the road, ba'afilu hi ishto, even if it's his own wife. So again, according to Marashah, you have two different reasons why he shouldn't walk after his own wife. The Rashi is giving the reason mishum gnai, the Rambam is giving the reason because of mishkol. So now, in the case of adam and chava, only the reason of gnai would apply because they can't see each other anymore. And the Braisa continues, nizdam galoy ala gesher, what if a woman comes ahead of a person on a bridge? An Eishasish, and particularly Rashi says, Yisav Kenna, with Stodin, you should try to move over to the side. In other words, try to go to the side so you're not directly behind her until you're able to pass her. The idea being, in other words, apparently a bridge is narrow, so you may not have a choice to be able to get ahead, but at least try to move off to the side. And anybody who follows a woman, who walks behind a woman in a river, where in particular in a river, because she doesn't want to get her clothes too wet, she hitches them up. So therefore, he's seeing things that he shouldn't see. Then he won't have a chelik in olam haba. Tosfos says doesn't mean if it's a one-time thing. It means if a person regularly does this kind of thing, then he's not zoichat to a chelik in olam haba. Then Yehoyada says the vote. That what it means is, since we know that the ultimate reward of Olam Haba, we learned earlier in the Sechta, is Nen and Miziva Shechina, that they're able to see the glory of the Shechina and bask in it. So now instead he was seeing things that he's not supposed to see, and with his eyes, so therefore he loses out on that schar in Olam Haba. So Rashi says particularly Eishas Ish. For Pashtos, if it was a Pnuya, maybe it wouldn't be as much of an issue, but still, when we're talking Achorei Anor, then maybe it's a different thing. Rashi mentioned his Dam Galal Gesher. He says, well, both exactly, he says Eishas Ish. Now there is some discussion about that among poskim, and especially on a busy street, you really have a choice, and if you're not going to walk behind a woman, you're not going to get anywhere. So in particular, they talk about the Iker thing is not, at least not to walk within four amas behind. The Radvaz actually says that in one of his Trubas, he says you shouldn't think that it's maybe only because you're going to be looking at her, and therefore if maybe you're like in one of these Muslim countries where they're dressed head to toe, then it shouldn't matter. The Radvaz says actually it doesn't make a difference. But there are poskim who say that primarily the Kpeda is if you're walking within four amas behind her. Especially on a busy street, you really may not have much of an option otherwise. So, continuing on this topic of walking behind women, the Gemara, and then being involved with women overmuch, the Gemara says, "Tonan abanan." We learn in a Braisa, "Hamiratza mois leisha miyoda leyoda." If a man counts out money from his hand to her hand, or miyoda leyoda, from her hand to his hand, to daily stackleba, in order to stare at her, so in other words, like he's taking his time counting out the money, coin by coin, in order that he has more chance to look at her, then afilu kibbol Torah miSinai to Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom. So then, even if he received the Torah, there's two different gersos over here: the gersa of Ein Yaakov and the gersa of the Gemara. So the first, the Ein Yaakov's gersa is afilu kibbol Torah miSinai to Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom. Even if he was as great that he received the Torah from Sinai, he's on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom. Yichtid ben yimino eish das lano, where the pasuk says that Hashem, that Moshe received the Torah from Hashem's right hand, a fiery Torah to them. Or the other gersa is in the Gemara, in Yesh, after the Yesh Yod, a Torah of Maisim Tovim from Moshe Rabbeinu, even if he has Torah of Maisim Tovim on the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu, nevertheless, lo yinotzo or yinaka midina shel Gehenna. Still, as a result of that, he won't be saved or he won't be cleansed from the din of Gehenna. Because of this way that he's acting and trying to take the time to be able to look at her beauty. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, yod le yod lo yinaka ra. Hand to hand, meaning even if he's like Moshe Rabbeinu, who received the Torah from Hashem's hand to his hand, so even if he's of that caliber, nevertheless, lo yinaka ra, he won't be cleansed from evil. And my lo yinaka ra, what does that mean? What particular evil? What are we talking about? Midina shel Gehenem shenikra ra. So he won't be saved from the judgment of Gehenem, which is called in other psukim ra. So therefore, it means, so yod le yod, lo yinaka ra, even if he's the kind of person, so in other words, we're dashing the word yod le yod in a double meaning. Because he acted in this way, of yod le yod, of counting money from her hand to his hand, or vice versa, in order to be able to look at her, even if he's the kind of person of whom we can say, yod le yod, that he received the Torah personally from Hashem to him, like Moshe Rabbeinu did, nevertheless, lo yinaka ra, he won't be cleansed from the evil, he's still going to have to go through a spell of Gehenna. That's the point. Well, that's the point. We would think that maybe a person who's on such a high level, maybe the schus of his Torah, the schus of his closeness with Hashem would protect him. We have to, you know, you think of it. We had earlier in the Masechta, for example, we had examples of Amiroyim who, for example, Rav Gidol used to actually instruct women who were going to Tovel on the proper posture to Tovel. And the Chacham said that the Chacham said, aren't you worried about Hirhurim? And he explained that to him, he doesn't have any Hirhurim from them. So now you would think, by the same token, this person who's doing this, he's counting money from his hand to her hand, Kedeli Stakaba, maybe he can get away with the excuse that he doesn't have Hirhurim. Nevertheless, we're saying, well, you're not going to. Whatever the reason, well, that's the point, because he's Mistakel, therefore we know there's a problem over here, as opposed to Rav Gidol wasn't looking at them, except insofar as he needed to do that in order to instruct them on what to do while they're talking. A lot of Rebbeim, yeah, not in Israel. Yeah, for example, it says about the Tzemach Tzedek, I think, that he didn't used to take women in for Yechidus at all, until finally the Rebbe Tzin Chaim Mushka pressured him into doing that. But yeah, so, So, Shenema, as the Pasuk said, yeah, Yod the Yod, but you're not good on, Medina Shal Gehenim Shenikra. Elsewhere in Sota, Tosfos points out, and a few of the Mephoshim bring it over here, that there's actually two psukim in Mishlei that use this expression yod le yod lo yinaka. There's another one that goes toyav as Hashem kol gvalev, an abomination to Hashem is anybody who's proud of heart. Yod le yod lo yinaka, from hand to hand, he won't be cleansed. So therefore, so that one actually Gemara explains in Sota is referring to a gas ruach, a person who's proud, a person who's a baal gaiva. Again, even if he's of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu to receive the Torah from Hashem, nevertheless he's still lo yinaka ra. Here we're talking about a different pasuk which begins yod le yod lo yinaka ra, and the end of it is v'zerat tzadikim nimlat, the descendants of the tzadikim will be saved. That's referring to what we're talking about over here, the person who's counting out money to the woman in order to save her. So the Gemara continues on this topic. Amr of Nachman, Manoyach Ama Oretzoya. Manoyach, the father of Shimshin. We have the story of him in Sefer Shoftim, in fact, Torah of Parshas Nasai. So he was an Ama Oretz. Shenema, Vayelach Manoyach Achre Ishtoy. Because the Pasuk says that Manoyach followed his wife. Since we're saying over here that a man shouldn't walk behind his wife, so Manoyach should have known better. You have the story over there. So the Malach had come to her and told her, you're going to have a baby, he's going to be a Nazir, etc. She tells her husband, Manoyach davens for the Malach to come back. The Malach comes back, she's in the field, she runs to tell Manoyach, and Manoyach, etc., followed her in order to hear what the Malach has to say. So the fact that it says it like that, shows that we're saying he was an Amah Oretz, he should have known better. So the Gemara says, Maskat or Rav Nachman Yitzchak, what Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, if that's what it means, every time it says about a man, Vayelach, that he went after a woman, then Gabe Okona, what are you going to say by Elkanah, where the pasuk says that Elkanah followed his wife, Elkanah, the father of Shmuel? Now, the problem with that is that there's no such pasuk in the entire Tanakh. So Tosfos, and there's a footnote over here from Tosfos, of Yehuda HaChassid, that says, take that out, it doesn't belong in the Gemara. There's no such pasuk. On the other hand, the Maharshal says, come on. You know, you're going to have something where maybe, you know, they copied out a word or a phrase wrongly or something, but who would put in an entire line in the Gemara over here referring to a pasuk that doesn't exist? So the Maharshal gives a whole explanation that in the connection with Elkanah at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, there's a pasuk that says that after the whole story over there, it says, Vayelech Elkanah Horamasa al Beisa. He went, so literally it means he went to Ramah to his house. But the Gemara is dashing, since we know Beisai Zu Ishtai, like by the Kohen Gadol, therefore the Gemara is dashing that Al Beisai means he followed his wife in going home to Ramah. And therefore the Gemara is paraphrasing the pasuk. It doesn't actually say Vayelech Elkanah Achrei Ishtai, but it says Vayelech Elkanah Horamasa Al Beisai, and the Gemara is understanding that that can be taken to mean that he followed Chana home. Marusha says that's still a little bit of a doicha to say that the Gemara is taking it from that. Rather, Marusha says like this. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, you have the story of Pelegish Begibah. And how does it begin? You have this fellow introduced over there, who's never introduced by name, a Levi who lives on the edge of Har Ephraim, in the center of the mountains, in the center of Eretz Yisrael. He had a Pelegish. She ran away to her father's house in Beis Lechem. He follows her to Beis Lechem, convinces her to come back with him, and then when they're on the way back, they stop in Givah, and the whole tragedy happens. So now the pasuk uses the expression that he followed her to go to Beis Lechem. He was following in her footsteps. So now Marashkal says the Gemara may be understanding over here that Levi is none other than Elkanah, which Marashkal says in that case it may not work out so well. If he went to the Seder Asmanim, Seder Olam, which is a medrash from Rabbi Yossi, says that the story of Pelegish Begibah happened near the beginning of the time of the Shoftim. Like shortly after Yeshua had passed away. In that case, Elkanah lived a couple hundred years later. On the other hand, the Radak on the Pesukim says there that maybe the story of Pelegish Begibah happened during the time when Shimshon was in jail. We know that eventually the Plishtim captured him, they blinded him, they put him in jail, and eventually he knocked down the whole building on top of thousands of Plishtim. But during that time, the Radak says is when there was no central authority, there wasn't any shofet, the Shimshon is in jail. During that time, people took advantage of the situation. That's when you have the story of Pelegish Begibah. So according to that, Marashal says it could actually work. The Seder Asmanim would work out well enough that Elkanah was living at that time. Whatever the case, so he says, that's what the Gemara means about this Vayelech Elkanah Achrei Ishtai. The Gemara is assuming that that Levi from the end of Sefer Shoftim, from the story of Pelegish Begibah, is none other than Elkanah. Well, in that case, then, either way, so whether you understand like that, or whether you understand like the Marashal, that it's referring to the actual pasuk about Elkanah, Vayelech Elkanah Al Beisai, either way, you have a pasuk that implies that he followed his wife. The Gabi Elisha. What about by Elisha? If the Vayokam Vayelech Acharel, by the story of the Isha Shunamis, after the Parshas Vayera. So she comes to Elisha with the baby has died, and he follows her back to the house in order to be Machayim Mason. So Hochinami Acharel Mamish. Are you going to say in those cases that it actually means they followed them? If you're saying Mela Monoyach, you could say it was an Amoretz. You're not going to say that Elkanah or Elisha were Amoretz. Chas v'shalom. So what's going on? Ela Achad Vareha V'Acharat Zasa. Obviously, the answer is by Elkanah and by Elisha. If it's saying that they followed a woman, means they followed her words and her advice. The same way by Manoyah. What forces you to say that means they actually literally followed behind her? It can mean that he followed her advice. She's telling him, come out to the field. The Malach is there, so he followed her. He followed what she's saying, but not necessarily that he walked behind her. Now, if we do, after all, accept what Rav Nachman says, that Manoyach was an Amoretz, and we say that by Manoyach, the Taka means that he literally walked behind her, in that case, Afilu Beirav Nami Laikara, then you should know, it's not just that he's an Amoretz, he doesn't know this Maimah Chazal that we were saying before, that a man shouldn't walk behind a woman. It would mean that he didn't even know he didn't even know what it says in a pasuk, or to learn an implication from a pasuk. Dichtiv, Vatokam Rivka Venarisev, Vatokavna Alagmalim. The pasuk says, Rivka and her girls got up and rode on the camels, Vatelachna Achne Ha'ish, and they followed the man, Eliezer, to go back to Avraham's house. The point is, Achne Ha'ish, Velo Lifne Ha'ish. The point is, they made a point of going behind him rather than ahead of him, because if they went ahead of him, then there would be Machshel in the mist. So in other words, according to that, Manoyach, if he tackled, walked behind his wife, he didn't even consider the implication of that pasuk to realize that he shouldn't have done that. Marsha points out, first of all, that Rivka at that point, of course, was already niskadish to Yitzchak. She's already considered an Eishes Ish. So like this before, we said that a man shouldn't walk behind his wife. We said one because of a gnai. But again, by his own wife, there's no issur, because after all, his wife is mutter to him. Well, then in that case, so what's the proof from Rivka? In Rivka, that's different. She was an Eishes Ish already. Nevertheless, the fact that he didn't realize that it says that he shouldn't do it, mishum gnai, then we still hold that against him. She went back with Eliezer, yeah. Well, that Rivka, right? She was in the Scottish theater. Yeah, he was Makadosh Ari Deshlich, sure. With that said, though, I mean, Eitz Yosef points out, when you get down to it, for Rivka herself, fine, was an Eishes Ish, but the pasuk mentions not only Rivka, it also mentions her Nareseha, her attendants. They were not married, they were not Niskadish, they were a Pnuya. Now, later on, and later in Jewish history, there was an Isser of Yichud with a Pnuya. That Isser didn't exist yet. Therefore, the fact the pasuk makes a point of mentioning not only that Rivka rode behind Eliezer, but also that her girls did, that should have clued Manoyachin. Rav Ashi is saying that even a Pnuya, where there's otherwise no Isser, a man should be going ahead rather than behind. And the fact that Manoyach didn't realize that, then the Gemara is holding that against him. The Isser Pnuya is later on. So the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Yechanan, Achore Ari V'loy Achore Isha. Better a person should walk behind a lion, even though that can be pretty dangerous, rather than walk behind a woman, based on everything that we've been saying so far. There is, by the way, a drosha on this that says from the. Well, so there is actually a verse from the Bnei Yisachar on this that says that it's also hinting the mazel of is Aryeh. The mazel of Elul was Besula, which is a woman. So therefore, the hint is Achore Ari. Better you should be doing tshuva during Chodesh Elul, rather than Achore Isha, rather than wait until Elul is over, and now you're already after the time of the Isha, and then you're first thinking of doing tshuva. Use the time of Elul wisely. Continue. Achore Isha v'loy Achore Avodas Kachavim. Even if you have a choice, better to be walking behind a woman rather than Avodah Zarah. Because Avodah Zarah, the Gemara explains, in Masechta Avodah Zarah, can be very alluring also. So Marsha explains, in other words, we're talking about over here, inevitably you're going to have to do one or the other. You really have no choice. So then you take the lesser of two evils, kind of. And Achore Avodah Zarah, but I Achore Besechnesis B'Shar Shatzul Mespalin. It's even better to walk behind Avodah Zarah rather than to walk behind a shul when the people are davening over there, because then it makes it look like the person is saying Rashi says it looks like he's purik oil mitzvahs, as though he's throwing off the yoke of mitzvahs or mavaza besachnesis and mocking the shul. It's not an important place to go, and therefore that's a problem. And as Gemara is going to say, just a second. Marsha adds a different point. In other words, that even if he walks behind Avodah Zarah, the worst that can happen is people are going to think that he's over Avodah Zarah b'shitur, that he's over Avodah Zarah lahavdil together with Hashem. But now when he goes behind the shul and he doesn't go in, it looks like he's completely being kofer in Hashem's existence. However, the Gemara says, that would only apply if there's no other door to the shul. But if the shul has another door, there's no problem, because people see him passing by the one door, they'll figure, okay, he's going in through the other door. Also, this would only apply if he's not riding on a donkey. the Deloy Dori Tuna, and also if he's not carrying a boon, or Deloy Manach Tefillin, and also if he's not wearing Tefillin, but if you have one of those, then it doesn't matter. If he's riding a donkey and he doesn't stop, then people realize, okay, he doesn't have any place to park his donkey. Same thing if he's carrying a burden, and if he's wearing tefillin, then it becomes obvious that he has Omar Shemayim on him, and he's not ignoring the shul because of that. Earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara also mentioned another point that if there's another shul in town, then it's also fine, because then people are going to figure he's going to that other shul. So in short, it would only be if there's only one shul in town, and that shul has only one door, and he's not riding, he's not carrying a burden, he's not wearing tefillin, then we're saying it would be a bad thing for him to go behind the shul as if like he doesn't believe in Hashem, whom they're davening to in the shul. But Pashtus, the Gemara is not making a distinction whether he daven or not to answer your question. So the Pashtus, that doesn't make a difference. Even if he already daven, still, like this, Shoshat, Sibu Mespalin, then we expect that he should at least go in and join them for a little bit.
Instead of walking with a dog, we should have a line.
Instead of walking with a dog, yeah. Nobody was Well, that's also true. That's a different thing. Okay. So let's talk about the interplay between Geula and Tshuva. The Geula is going to come even before the Jewish people do Tshuva. We know because the pasuk says, "Vehu yifdeh Yisrael mikol avinoisav," and Mitzvah Sadat Hashem will redeem the Jewish people from all their averus. And Mitzvah Sadat, it says, even the averus will not be ma'akev the geula, because Hashem will rescue the Jewish people from their averus. Now you have also a pasuk. You have a pasuk in Micha, Mikel Kamoicho, who is a god like you. Noise Ovin va'over al pesha lo sheres nachlasa. And Hashem forgives Ovin and overlooks pesha for the remnant of his inheritance. Lo'hechsek la'adapo. He won't hold on to his anger forever, because Hashem desires chesed. So the Meforshim explain, l'sheiris nachlosei means those who are left over after chedlei Mashiach. So you have, and the Rebbe talks here, so therefore that's the ud mutzal me'esh, that's the, to use the expression of the pasuk, the brand grabbed out of the fire of our generation, we Jews who are here after the Holocaust. So therefore, since the Stavid says, it means Hashem is not going to be particular about the Pesha and pay attention to it and want to punish for it. Rather, Hashem will, so to speak, overlook it and pass by as if he didn't see it. And the Radak says the expression, those who are left when Mashiach comes, even though they may be guilty, they may deserve not to go out of Golus because of the tremendously bad things they did, nevertheless, Hashem will not keep on looking at their mice and kichofetz chesed who, because Hashem desires chesed, and his chesed will overcome their chatoyim when the time of the geula comes. So in short, when Mashiach comes, even there are people who are not yet shomer Torah or mitzvahs, nevertheless, unlike by Yetzias Mitzrayim, they're not goners, they will be part of the geula, and then after that, they will do tshuva. Miyad mamash. Yeah. 5:45, I know. So, okay. So, we're fine. Okay. Continuing on halachas of after brachas. When you have something that's not the main part of the fruit, then it goes down one level. So if the fruit it came from is ha'etz, then the tofel would be bar pri adama, and if the fruit was hadama, then the tofel would be shakol. So for example, this example comes from the Gemara. You have a plant called slaf. In English, it's called caper berries. So now you have, beside the berries themselves that are edible, you also have the leaves are edible. And then on the leaves, you have these little buttons that stick out, sort of like you have sometimes on arava leaves. Now, the fruit is the main tree, and then you have around the fruit there's a shell called tafrisin. In Gemara terminology, some say that the yin tafrisin that's used in the Torah is made from those. Anyway, that's a shell around it, and those are also edible. So now, the berries themselves, the caper berries themselves are the main peri, so you say ha'et. The rest of the things, the leaves and the buttons and the tafrisin, you say ha'dama. Another example, he says, would be rose leaves. If you take rose leaves and you mix them, you mix them with sugar and water, and you make like a compote out of them, so you say them ha'adama, even though they grow from a tree. Certain kinds of roses grow on trees, because again, they're not the main thing. Same thing with orange peels, chocolate covered orange peels, or candied orange peels, or whatever. Same thing are ha'adama. And the same thing, for example, if you do that with cucumber peels, then there would be shakol. Another one would be, for example, pea pods. You have peas themselves, a hadama. So now, even though the pods themselves may be sweet, but if you eat them without the peas, then they're shackled. The way the Altadeva phrases it and say the Birkas Hananin, it maybe implies, he says, the mentions over here, that actually even if you eat them with the peas, they would be shackled. So in other words, if you eat them all together, of course, it's hadama, but if you're eating the peas and then you're eating the shells, then maybe in fact the shells separately would be shackled. On the other hand, the ones that are planted where they're intended to be eaten with those shells, then in fact the shells are hadama because then those are considered the main thing as well. They talk about in that connection actually. He doesn't mention over here, but for example, there's an interesting discussion about hearts of palm. The Gemara tells us hearts of palm are shakol, or hadama actually, I think. But they say nowadays that may not be the case because nowadays there are trees that are grown specifically for hearts of palm. Therefore, they become the ikker fruit. So I don't remember if Rabbi Marlar writes this in his brachas guide, but definitely there are some rabbanim who write in their brachas guides that hearts of palm nowadays would be ha'etz on those grounds.